It's a lot going on in the world today, and elections and heating up, and the news, and the false news, and the fake news. And the trick is, when we learn Torah, to just forget everything. And we're standing now on Har Sinai, and we're dealing with Devar Hashem. I thank all who already commented on yesterday's shir, and I thank Yomo. He puts it up right away, and people appreciate it. Now, coming back to today. Today, first of all, let's get it straight. It's November 24th, 2022. And October, I'm a month ahead of myself. It's October 24th, 2022. It's Monday morning. It's Erev Rosh Chodesh Macheshvan. At least I have that right. I also want to mention that if I understood correctly, the clock is being changed this weekend. So I'm saying that for those on screen listening from across the world, they're also changing. Whatever.
Europe is changing.
Okay, just to be up to date what time it is here, so you don't. I don't want you to lose an hour waiting in vain. Okay, I also want to mention that next Monday will be a little bit different and a little bit special, because I'll be ending this year 15 minutes early, and we'll go for the next half hour. I'm going to dialogue with Joseph Tzadik Mendelovich. He just put out a documentary on the attempt to steal the plane, hijack the plane 52 years ago. And there's a lot I want to ask him and publicize what Joseph Tzadik is doing. But we'll leave that for next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. All right, we're coming back to the Sapna, and I have to say what we're hitting today. We come to the most famous part of the Al HaGula, the Al HaTemura. And if you recall, a month ago, the Satma spoke in terms of the Balei Tshuva. People tell him there are a lot of Balei Tshuva. He compared it to the Shabtai Tzvi movement. And he said there also were a lot of Balei Tshuva then. And what happened to them at the end, they went into the Catholic Church, the Frankist, and nothing will come out of the Balei Tshuva of today. More than that, people talk about what Kastner did. So he saved a few Jews, but look how many died in the Holocaust. And again, we come back to the whole question, was Kastner responsible for what happened in Hungary? Yes, no. And he has the attitude, how can you call it salvation that we won the Six-Day War? Look how many died, though, right? You saved Jews. Who knows how long it will last? And then he quotes, and we ended off the Shia, quoting the Rishon Rebbe, which is interesting that the Satma quotes the Rishon dynasty, that he heard from Eitut Nemana that the Rishon said, all that will happen with the Enlightenment and what's happening in the modern world, ultimately, it will all be destroyed. And similarly, what we're seeing here in Israel, they're building, they're doing, they're accomplishing, they're creating, ultimately, all of it will be destroyed because it's being built by people who do not have proper belief. I'm quoting here, we ended off the shiur, this is a direct quote from Harav HaKodesh Mirushin Zechut Yagen Aleinu, Shema Mipi Kadshol Dibura Meila, Teidu Dekamoshe Yarat HaEsh Min Shemaim L'Aliyo B'Har Kamel, V'lo Yarat L'Nevir Habal, Be'ikvet the Meshichacha Yeyeh HaHefech, She'yaret HaEsh Min Shemaim L'Nevir Habal, that ultimately, Bizman Yemot HaMashiach, it'll be just the opposite. The Nevi'a HaBa'al will have success. Everything they do will be built and will entice us and it's going to be very difficult to withstand the pressure. And he also makes the charge here that the Zionists controlled the world press, the television at the time, the radio. Remember, it was a time when we were little David HaMelech and the Arabs were Goliath, just the opposite of the way they view us today, although they're hundreds and hundreds of millions of Arabs, and we're a little, maybe 7 million Jews here, Kanayin Hara. But, so this is the way the Satmar viewed it. All right, this is his viewpoint, this is his Shita. And then we go a step further, beginning on page Kuf Lamed Tet. And here is something that is as real today as it was when the Satmar wrote this, late 60s, we're talking 68, so we're talking about 54 years ago. And that is going to the Kotel. V'alicha v'ubinyan halicha el Kotel ha-maravil mekomot ha-kadshim that now have so-called been liberated by the IDF, I tell everyone not to go. And here he talks about what the Kotel. And he describes it. This is now page Kuf Mem He. He says, what has happened that the Kotel Knufya Lepritzot Bitarovet Anashim Vinashim? And he says at the Kotel Chilul Shem Shamayim Vaprachesia, Chilul Shabbos Vaprachesia. And he says, Kasva Chalila, to go to the Kotel and to become part of this Hamon Ha'am and just give credit to the Zionists and enhance their power, their position, their attractiveness. Now, what is he referring to? And here, you know, it's fascinating. We came to visit Israel the first time. In my days, there was no such thing as going to Israel for a year of study. Maybe there were exceptions, but very few and far between. Karen Biavner, I remember, did have some YU students in the 60s. And Charlie, you went to Kol Torah in the 60s. But these were few and far between. So we had never been to Israel. And came the Six-Day War, and my wife made up her mind we're going in Aliyah. I was very happy in America. I was a rabbi, building a kehillah, teaching at YU. You know, I found myself. But my wife made up her mind, and the Six-Day War was the Six-Day War. So we visited Israel the first time in 68, a Rabbinical Council of American TU. We made friends that remained our friends for life then, Rabbi Albert, Rabbi Sladowski, Rabbi Holzer. It was an interesting event. And you come to the Kotel, there are two ways to look at it. I was overwhelmed. I never saw a shul like it. Thousands of people davening with 100 different minyanim. To me, it was for the, you know, when I came in Aliyah for 46 years, I had my own minyan Friday night at the Kotel. Someone just asked me, a student came to see me yesterday who knows me from years ago, and he asked me about the minyan, if it's still going, and I had to tell him it's 8 years already that the minyan continues, but yours truly and my cousin, the same week, we both, our legs disappeared on us. It's an amazing thing. Bobby Ash and yours truly, the same week our kneecaps went, meniscus, we never were at the Kotel again for Friday night. But other people will come to the Kotel and say, oh, what a crowd, and the minyanim, and they make so much noise, and you can't concentrate, and I've heard people, and I don't want to be cynical. What's your problem?
You can't hear the Shliach Tzibur.
You can't hear the Shliach Tzibur. All right, when they say Kedusha Kaddish, everyone answers, you know what to answer. In Alexandria, they couldn't hear the Shliach Tzibur either. They had to wave flags, you know the Gemara. So, you see, it depends on the way you look at it. But there's more to it. You come to the Kotel, there is a tremendous crowd of Am Yisrael. So, all right, in front of the Kotel, there's a Mechitza, Baruch Hashem. Right now, depending on the new government, we'll see what happens with the reform. It just is beyond my comprehension. What did the reform have to do with the Kotel? We believe there'll be Kabbarat again. There'll be a Beit HaMikdash. They abolished Kabbarat. They abolished the Beit HaMikdash 200 years ago. Well, what is the Kotel? But all right, you know my feeling. They want recognition. And it would be the worst thing in the world to let them have a sign up, Orthodox here, Reform here. All you're doing by that sign is encouraging assimilation and intermarriage, and I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. We know what's going on in America, lo aleinu. So then outside, beyond where the actual davening takes place, Einachinami, they're mob scenes, men and women. By the way, I a Shavuos night, other times they put up a mechitza now outside too, because the crowd is so large and they're davening there. But generally speaking, yes, you can see Hamon Ha'am. So again, there are two ways to look at it. One way is to look at it pre-tzut, which we spoke about last week with the tefillin, the last time we met with the tefillin stand, where isn't it fabulous? Crowds are coming together, people are coming together, Jews are inspired, they're at the Kotel, Makam HaMikdash. They estimated over 2 million Jews visited the Kotel on Sukkot. I mean, you have to, what we have gone through, and that's such an achievement. So I'm not denying that there may be men and women, who perhaps for the Satmaruv it looks like a little preacher. On the other hand, that of those men and women, Bekedusha Vitara, how many Balei Tshuva came out of it? You read the memoir literature today, just read Michael Kaufman. I don't know if he's alive or not. The Michael Kanya, he's alive. That's you gave me the book, right? Michael Kaufman, he used the Hebrew Hebraized name. I don't know if it's officially Hebraized, just the pen name, Kaniel, Michael Kaniel. Michael Kaufman, you read his book, you see the stories of people, what happened at the Kotel. It's beyond words. And you don't realize with a Baal Teshuva, see what I've seen in life, you make someone from, 50 years later, from that one person, you can have 100 direct descendants. Rubam kekulam shomrei Torah mitzvah. I mean, so, all right. And I mean, he goes on and on. Bavonoteinu harabim nihira nihaitala makom hayitvadut lalafim minim prutzim. He describes it like the worst possible. All right, I'll agree too. There may be a woman there who's not dressed properly. You know, they give out scarves at the Kotel. They give out kippah at the Kotel. But Rebbeinu Shelolam, to describe that this is pritzut, this is a makam hamikdash, but he sees it in his eyes, and then he says, not only that, people are going up the Har HaBayit, which is Anisa Karet, And he says the Israelis publicize how many people go up shem mitpa'arim b'mispach ha'mevakrim ha'cholchim shama u'mefasamim davar kazeh. And how can they boast about it? And if we go there, we help them, we're mesayeya le'ovdei. Where Messiah, it's an Isha, Messiah, I don't want to use his words, but Messiah la ovde avodah zarah, pshuto kamashma'ol, the Kotel. Now, what he's touching upon here is right out of the newspapers of today. I've gotten the Shiloh 1,000 times over, and I've discussed it in class, and I said one line that I got already corrections on, but I still hold by that line. And it's very simple. Are we allowed to go on Har HaBayit? From the pure halachic look, if it's a makom that really has Kedushat Har HaBayit, you're not allowed to go. This is the psak of the Rambam and many Rishonim On the other hand, the Ra'abad, the Ravid, disagrees and he holds the Kedusha is gone. And I heard so many shurim from the Rav on this, I can just hear the Rav in my mind that he's quoting the Ravid that the Kedusha is gone from the Har HaBayit, but it went to Bavel, it went to the Arabic countries, it went to Lithuania, wherever Jews went, they carried the Kedusha with them. On the other hand, Rabbi Gorin did research and others have done research, and they've reached the conclusion that only part of what we call the Har HaBayit has the original Kedusha. And they claim where they go up on Har HaBayit, that is not where the real Kedusha is, and there you're allowed to go, and there's no Issa Karet, but they're dinim of covered Har HaBayit, you have to take off shoes, you have to empty pockets, you have to go to mikveh first, and various psukim. And then I added, and b'diavad, you can always be samach on the Ravid. So I remember from Mekas HaRav, from Beit HaRav Kook, they sent me and they sent the emails that we're not samach on the Ravid, we're samach on the research that this is not with Kedusha Tarabayat. All right, I want to add, and then the Satmar of him, this argument has gone on for 50 plus years already. But I want to add that in contemporary times, there's more to it. We're fighting a battle for existence. This war that began the minute Jews started coming to Israel, and it began already in the 1880s, the 1890s, this war continues until today. I mean, all of you are up to date on the news. Just this past Shabbat, a yeshiva bachur, maybe an Anglo-Haredi, I don't even know, because it was in the Anglo-Haredi neighborhood, they almost killed him. And then the guard shot the mechabel. Kids are playing in the playground. Imagine that's what the little Israeli kids had to see. But all right, this is the reality of life here. And he's alive. He's in less bad shape than the yeshiva boy he attacked. So there is something to be said that whoever controls the Har HaBayit controls the land of Eretz Yisrael. And you see that in the news, you see that with the rockets from Gaza, that this is a very sensitive issue. And the more that go up, the more we do, the more we show we're here to stay, it is absolutely pikuach nefesh, muhammed mitzvah, in the full sense of the word. So I've told people, I grew up not to go on Har HaBayit. But nowadays, if you want to go, adarabba v'yadarabba. Simply follow the instructions of the Rabbanim and listen to what they say and go where they tell you you can go. And the more, the better. And this is exactly what he says here, that the radio, the press releases, so many go up on Har HaBayit. And he's writing it 1968. Right now it was in the news that we were boasting. I saw the Arab quotes of the Arab press that we were boasting. Thousands went up in the Har HaBayit and they're cursing and maledicting. But it shows you it's the most sensitive part of the country. And he who controls the Har HaBayit controls the state of Israel. And this is why how can we, it came out in yesterday's class, how can we ever forgive Sharon what was the name of the other guy, the mayor of Jerusalem, I'm ready to say Kolek.
Teddy Kolek.
No, it's after Kolek, the guy who went to jail.
Olmert.
How can we ever forgive Sharon and Olmert for what they did in Kush Katif? How can you forgive Ben Gurion for Altolena? And it's absolutely true. The Dayan gave them the keys, gave them ownership. Halavai, we would have had a tzaddik who had to deal with them and understood what Torah is about and Har HaBayit is about. And back in 67, he should have said to them, we're no longer letting you run the Har HaBayit. We're happy if you want to worship there. But we control the Har HaBayit. We have the key. And this, in my humble opinion, comes up in the election. If you saw the Jerusalem Post on Friday, I still am choking. Article after article after article with enmity towards Torah, towards Israel, towards right wing, and only the progressives, the homosexuals, the lesbians, Rabbanim writing articles like this. I'll tell you how the Jew. Today I saw the Post was a little better. There must have been an outcry. So they have a few articles that are written by people who understand what we are about. But there's a big difference from putting it in a Monday paper to putting it in the Friday paper, which sells 2 to 3 times as many copies. But it's amazing that the Satmaruz raises this issue in 68, and this issue is with us right in 2023. Okay, then he goes further, and here too, the archaeological digs. He says, "L'mashma ozen davanav shenu shelo hayak kizot meyimot olam umeot hayata Yisrael lagoy." That we never had something like this from the time the Jewish people became a nation, became a people. They want to dig under the Har Habayit. They want to dig under the Kotel. And they want to destroy the Kotel. Digging, that's what's important, to archaeological dig, totally chiloni, totally secular. And he says, they go on and on, kama pritzat u pritzat, and like the Ruzhna Rebbe said, all the support is going to be for the Ovdei Habal. Now, let's talk about the archaeological digs. The archaeological digs, what they have done at the Kotel, it's Merab Sinikra, beyond comprehension. They have recreated Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni. The walkways, if you've taken the tours, it is overwhelming. Our roots, our connection, it has nothing to do with destroying the Kotel. They go out of their way not to undermine the foundations of the Kotel. So you see, there were archaeological digs, but 60, 50 years later, it's a different world, a different Kotel. And I have a husband of a student who's now one of the guides. He's had to take, you get selected, and you have to take an entire course. You can have a PhD, but you got to learn all over, all about the Kotel, the layers, what it's talking about. And I have to say, it's very inspiring. People come from America, they make a bar mitzvah, people come from England, and they arrange to have a tour, so the young person being bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah, whatever you have, and a tour, it connects you. It brings you back to your roots. It's taking a Jew and putting him back in Bayit Sheni, and even some parts they say Bayit Rishon. And that's what the Satmar is writing about. But I have to say, in all honesty, that it turned out L'kavod L'Tiferet, and halavai they should continue, to explore and rebuild our past, and it shows our connection. Here the Arabs say, the Western world says, the progressives say, many assimilated Jews say, what do we have, Yerushalayim? What does it have to do with Jews? What are your roots? You're not there, what Yerushalayim? Arabs, they've been living there. Wow, these archaeological digs prove just the opposite. And he goes on and on against going to the Kotel and becoming part of the crowd and enhancing the strength, the power, how they're boasting about Baruch Hashem, Zionism, Jerusalem, the Kotel. We've rebuilt the archaeological digs. Now, Halacha l'maisa, I have to say this is one area where the Satmar Rav failed. Meaning that if it just relax, relax, Rick, you get too excited. You gotta relax, okay? Keep a smile on. And just remember, I had a big debate with Rabbi Gold. Rabbi Gold maledicted the Satmar. Wow! He accused them of ruining all the yeshiva in America, turning them into anti-Zionists. And I say, we have to reach out to Satmar. They're our biggest reservoir for Balei Tshuva. Follow? We have to bring them back. No. We have to bring them back to Yiddishkeit. At least they admit to being Shomer Shabbos. We're going to come to it. Not all, but most are Shomer Shabbos. We have to bring them back to proper Yiddishkeit. And here, the Satmar failed, meaning they don't listen to him. See, the attraction of the Kotel Maravi, the Sarid Beit HaMikdash, that a guy named Rakefet cries over the Mechitza, no one quotes me. No, all our politicians, from politicians. I think to be a politician, you have to be an Amoritz. If you're not an Amoritz to the second power, there were exceptions. When Rabbi Drukman called me, wanted to give me a safe spot on the ticket, the Knesset, so I told him that you can do it. He's an Adam Gadol, Rav Chaim Drukman, and Moshe Tzvi Neria, but I quoted Moshe Tzvi Neria to him in his memoir. He wrote, the four worst years of my life were the 4 years I was in the Knesset. Do you understand? The Rakefet Shita is fabulous. Only women should be in the Knesset. Men have to learn Torah. Women are exempt, and women by nature have to be nice. If they don't let the progressives ruin them and lose their feminine mystique, a mother is nicer than a father. The Rav gave many drashot on this. A father has to educate, teach. A mother has to love, motherly love. Mama, muta. You know, my butt, go into the hospital and you see people critically ill, and you hear when they're delirious, I never yet heard a person say, Abba, Abba. Oh, but you hear people say, Ima, Ima, Mama, Muta, etc. So here the Satmar Rav didn't win out. Can anyone bring me a sad proof that I'm absolutely right? Natan, I don't know if you were here or not, one Saturday night, past midnight, I believe, there were people coming out of the Kotel. It was after Shabbat already. And the Mechabel, standing right across the street from where they were parked, opened fire and badly injured quite a few people, most of them tourists from Borough Park. Okay? Tell me, who were these tourists from Borough Park? Satmar Chassidim. And they were coming from the Kotel. And Ein HaChinami, here's where Reb Yoelish has failed. The Kotel won out. The Yankees are a disgrace this morning. Okay? Houston is on top. Put the Kotel with Altuve and Bregman, who they say is Jewish. I wonder if he's got to check if his mother's Jewish. Not so much into marriage, but if he is, kol hakavod. And the Satmar Rav is holding hands with the Yankees. And I can tell you, at every Yankee game, I'm amazed you see Satmar Chassidim. And one of the last Yankee games I went to, I don't think we'll see a Yankee game again in person, but I remember I was there with good Jews. And I remember this wonderful Jew saying to me, you have to understand, this is their outlet. We have college degrees, we do many things. This is their outlet. They come to the Yankee Stadium, Baruch Hashem, okay? I understand it, not criticizing. But here, the Satmar is holding hands with the Yankees this morning, the Kotel with Houston. Not happy about it, Charlie, but that's the reality. I just told my Talmud, I have a very famous Talmud in America, I can always talk baseball and have no one here to talk with. You know, people grow older and they forget they were once young. But this Talmud, even though he's hitting 70 and he's world famous in his field, he's still young. So I left him a message. In my humble opinion, what happened these last few games cost the judge $30 to $40 million. You follow? He's up for the contract. He would have gotten $300 million for 10 years. He's not going to get a penny more than $270 million now. What a disgrace. But let's get back here. Okay. Now, Elliot, without a sense of humor, you don't survive and you don't reach my age. I got news for you. Reaching my age, a sense of humor is very, very important. Okay. Now, on page Kunufnam Dalit, he goes further, and we'll come back to this either later today or next time, and I'll give you more sources. And he says something very interesting. In Hungary, there was a tremendous split. You see, look at the map. There's part of Hungary that's near Poland, Galicia, part of Hungary that's near Germany. The reform movement began in Germany. It crossed the border into Hungary, at least the part of Hungary near Germany. And while reform didn't conquer Hungary, it gave birth to a semi-conservative movement. Do you know what it was called? Neolog. Neo, meaning something new, a new type of Judaism. To define it, I would say right-wing conservatism. In other words, they had mixed seating, but you could still find women who went to Neolog synagogues who went to mikveh. Follow it, it wasn't totally like the conservative movement in America. This was called Neolog. And they built a very big synagogue. I think the biggest synagogue in Europe is the Neolog synagogue. What's it, in Budapest? Where is it? It's a very big synagogue. And they exist until today, you should know. The Neolog exists until today. Although I have to say, to the credit of the communist system, and you know, I lived it, I saw it, there was no place to train rabbis of all in the Soviet Union. But in Hungary, they allowed the rabbinical seminary to continue. That rabbinical seminary, which was headed by a Schreiber, he was a Nur-Ur-Ur-Ur-Einikel of the Chatam Sofer, was considered Neolog, considered conservative. But they raised from people, I'm amazed, Rabbi Shaiowitz of Moscow, and he now remains the rabbinic figure in Moscow, though he's much older. I don't know, you know, how well he can function, but he has to be, I estimate, well into his 80s. He may be slightly older than me, etc. He was a product of the Neolog rabbinical school in Hungary, and I've told you this more than once. And I stand on it, and as someone who has studied Torah history and as someone who has studied rabbis backwards and forwards, you should know when communism fell, the conservative movement tried to get a foothold in Russia, and they came in and said to Rabbi Shaiowitz, you're one of us. We're conservative. And they offered a fortune of money, and he turned them down. He said, no, I'm not conservative, I'm Orthodox. And I want you to know, I checked this out with Rabbi Goldsmith when I visited Russia a number of years ago. I mean, no one could dream what would happen now, and Rabbi Pinchas Goldsmith, who became interested in Russian Jewry in my home, 18 Berlin, apartment 16. I inspired the future chief rabbi of Russia. It's a whole story, it's not for now. But I checked with him. And he told me, you're absolutely right. Rabbi Shaiowitz, the Karel Synagogue, remained strictly Orthodox. No innovations whatsoever. So it's interesting. Here the Satmar Rav says, with the Neologs, he says, as bad as the Neologs were, they were not as bad as the Zionists of today, of the secular Zionists. He says, in Israel, They want to totally remove all of Yiddishkeit, all of the restrictions that a Jew has. And the Neologs were much better than the secular Zionists of today. And all these Jews who think we have to join together, we have to build, we have to be happy. And he's Litein Simcha B'Libo. What are you happy about? Chilul HaKodesh. Chilul Pritzut at the Kotel. Archaeological digs under the Kotel would destroy any vestige left of the Beis HaMikdash. And this is what you're happy about? It is all the work of the Sitra Acher, of the Sutton. It's Kitrug al Am Yisrael, and the Sutton testing us. Will we worship the idol of Zionism, or will we remain good Jews? Okay. Then, you can't believe what comes next. On Kuf Samach Dalet, when this was published, no one could dream, lo aleinu, what would happen. And he says, then I was asked the question. What? Well, then, Vic, relax. You got to know the Satma inside out. And then you become a good Zionist. But I'm telling you, when I'm finished, I challenge any Satma Chassid or non-Zionist to prove me wrong. But first, I want to understand Satma. Okay? Now he says, I was asked about the Kever Rachel and the Morat HaMachpelah. And should you go there? And he says, it's the same thing like the Kotel. People go there, Pritzut, Tarovet, men, women, everyone mixed together. Why are we happy about it? And he tells the following story about what happened in Kever Reb Shimon Bar Yochai in Meron. And Halavai, our police department and all the people we depend upon would know the story. And he tells the story that many years ago the Jews went, there was no mechitza, there was tarovet, and there was an earthquake there. And you can check out in Zionist history, you'll come up with the exact year, and it really happened. And hundreds were killed. And he said the Rabbanim reached the conclusion that why did this happen? Because we went to the Mokom HaKodesh, the kever of the author, or at least the man, the kever of the individual who gave us the traditions that later are recorded in the Zohar. You see what I'm doing? I'm watching what I'm saying. So if you're a believer that he wrote it, fine. And if you accept all the scholarship, and I know some great Rabbanim who accept that scholarship, but the ideas come from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That everyone has to admit. The Rav would quote the Zohar, but the Chilul Rechimu, I mean, no two ways about it. And all right, there's a whole shaila, do we paskin like the Zohar when it differs with normative halacha? All right, there you can take a point of view that normative halacha is more important than the Zohar. But all right, depends on your outlook and understanding of Zohar. And he says the Rabbanim got together and they issued a cherem that for 5 years no one should go to Meron, and just keep away from the tarovet at the grave. We don't want a terrible accident to happen again.
And is it 5 or 500?
What'd you say? 5 years. 5 years, not 500 years. Five. 5 years. And we don't... And we... It's on page Yakub Samchet. And he says...
limnoa ha-chalicha al ha-tziyun ha-nishka. And he says, from that we learn where there's tarovat, where there's sins happening, we have to not visit, not be part of the crowd. And I would say the same thing applies to the Ma'orat HaMachpelah. You can't go. Crowds, Cholamoid, I have children, grandchildren who go, come back so inspired. What they've done at Ma'orat HaMachpelah, the innovations, and what they want to continue doing and make it wheelchair accessible, people come back overwhelmed. We visit the Avot, ach, what a skut. No, like the 5 years in Meron. Now, Kever Rachel is more of a problem because there always was a tradition to go to Kever Rachel. See, Montefiore built the, what we have, the what would you call it, the Ohel, and Kever Rachel, and I don't have to tell you, the davening, the tears, the women. I have in my own family descendants who go to Kever Rachel regularly, and Mama Rachel, and you know, the whole story of the Jews going into exile. Rachel, Mebakel, Lebaneha, Rosh Hashanah, what Kever Rachel means, and the davening, and the tefillah, and in my days of preaching as a rabbi. And here he says, yes, there was a minute to go. And velodatsu levatil minag yashan noshan. We don't want to cancel out a minag that is ancient. Avo bi emet gamahicha l'shem chayamakom listapek bo bismanenu. And here he doesn't talk about the tarovet. He knows there's separation of sexes. That's not the problem at Kever Rachel. But he speaks about the Arabs have built a cemetery all around Kever Rachel. And since the Arabs built the cemetery all around Kever Rachel, you have Kvarot Shel Rishaim. And he says, even Ma'orat HaMachpelah v'samach mileya kamakom b'kivrei Rishaim. And here already he quotes the Zohar and esoteric sources that if you go on Kivrei Rishayim, Heim Mazikim, the Rishayim who are buried there, and they harm the people who go on them. Kol HaKarov Aleichem Mitapkim Bo HaChitzoniyim L'Tam'om Rachmana L'Tzlan. And therefore, he says, all of this we shouldn't do. Not the Kotel, not Ma'orat HaMachpelah, not Kever Rachel. Chalila lavol l'makomot ha-kadoshim b'machshavot m'tuavot ke'elu. And chas v'chalila, the Zionist movement, we can't be part of it. Ubelisafek beloni chalit tzadikim hashochnim sham veloleratzon hulachem. And all this, we can't. The tzadikim who are buried there are not happy, are suffering. Rishayim, apikarsim, chiloniyim. You're coming. You're visiting. Mi bikeshot milkem lirmos chatzeirai. He quotes the pasuk, and he ends off that so many times the Zionists have gone to war, and 48, 56, 67, and all they've done is spilled Jewish blood. We have never seen anything like this in all our history, where Jews should force other Jews to die. And
he ends off the volume that v'zeh kol v'zeh al hagula v'al hatmura, that yes, we believe in redemption, but this is not the real redemption we long for. We believed him. This is tmura. It's phony. It's not the authentic redemption. For who rachum yechad priavon v'lo yashchid v'yishlach lanu et eliyahu zachur latov lahashpiyah dat al Yisrael lahashiv leiv avrabanim v'leiv banim al avotayim v'nizker legula shleima v'hamitit ולראות בנחמת יציון וירושלים ובישועת כל ישראל ושמחתם על ידי דוד משיח צדקנו במחרה בימינו. And that's the way he ends off על הגולה ועל התמורה. By the way, it's interesting, דוד משיח צדקנו. Generally we just say משיח צדקנו. How do we know the name of Mashiach? Why a David? He means a descendant of David. But isn't there a source that Mashiach Tzadkenu will be Menachem? The name will be Menachem, Menachem et Bnei Yisrael. And I need not tell you the anti-Chabadnikim, what they do with that source, etc. David, as far as you can discern from Vic, and you know, Vic comes from a very chashuva family. His uncle was a famous Rosh Hashiva. His brother, everyone I say, do you know a Snow? Rabbi Snow, the Rabbi Borough Park, very chashuva family, wonderful sisters, tzaddikim in the family, among them my own students. And Vic has been suffering. The Rebbe really has tortured him. Of course, I teach him with the Satma, and I dramatize and I explain. Okay, not to go to the Kotel, not to go to Kever Rachel, not to go to Marat HaMachpelah. Wow. And every war we fought, we killed Jews, Shlicha Dom and Ritzicha. When Ala Galula Bala Tmura appeared, it caused a tremendous storm. The world was rejoicing. Six-day war. We thought we'd be wiped off the map. And you know, not all of you remember this, but I remember it well. On the television, we saw the Russian ambassador to the UN with the Arab ambassadors, and they were rejoicing. We're going to wipe Israel off the map. A book appeared, a funny thing happened to me on the way to Tel Aviv about Nasser, the head of Egypt. We were really frightened, myself included. We had no idea what would happen. We thought the worst. And America didn't give a hoot. The secretary, I quoted in my memoir, because that pushed me in Taliyahu, when I heard the Secretary of State, we're neutral in actions, neutral in speech, neutral this, neutral that. Or maybe it was the Secretary of Defense. Check my memoir. I give you the name, I give you the quote, I give you the source. And that pushed me over the cliff. My wife is right, we have to go in Aliyah. The Satmarov, his volume was the first volume that came out after the Six-Day War. And his volume engendered an unbelievable amount of publications, of articles, all against the Satma by the greatest of the Rabbanim of that period. I just want to mention a few of the books. Much later, I'll come back to them and quote some of them, but not now. First of all, there's a volume that is, I would say, axiomatic to all religious Zionism in Israel. My own student translated it into English as well, Eim Habanim Smecha by Rabbi Yisachar Dov Teichtel. It's a wonderful volume, but it's a very, very sad volume, because here was an Ungarishadov, a great Talmud Chacham, had a yeshiva with outstanding students. It was like Yachal, like Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. It wasn't for the masses, it was for the best, the brightest. And he had all the Sakma Munkach ideology. That's the way he was raised. And he's Chozeh B'tshuva in this beautiful volume. And this, he says, if only we had listened, if only we had gone in Aliyah. The sad part is he died right towards the end of World War II. He didn't make it. His children did survive, and most of them became Chabatnikim. See, it's fascinating. They were not Munkach, not Sakma. Chabatnikim all over the world today. Shluchim, Tachtel. It's quite a volume. It lends itself to English translation. What do you know about the English translation? There were actually two English translations done, and there was a Din Torah, and I played a role in bridging the gap between everyone. Rav Teitel's son came to see me, I testified, etc., etc. And I'll tell you just very briefly. What happened was an American, B'nai Akiva, B'nai Kui, and his brother came in Aliyah, and he got a doctorate at Bar Ilan, and the doctorate was Anim Habanim Smecha, and he translated a good part of the volume, and it was published by Jason Aronson. Later, the family was upset that didn't do justice, etc. Who gave him permission to publish? On the other hand, they engaged a Talmud of mine who did a beautiful job in translating the volume into English. So they worked out an agreement, Baruch Hashem. You don't fight over Divrei Torah. This is a holy sefer. In the Tzioni Dati world, the Eim Habanim Smecha is widely studied. Not the entire volume. They take excerpts, because there's a lot of drushes in it, what we would call in popular language, pilpul. But it makes a tremendous impression. And all of us see this repeats itself time and time again. You see the Jews in Russia, the Jews in the Ukraine, they all could have gotten out in time. But you see, no one believes the worst can happen. Do we believe it? Imagine if I would have said in class 2 years ago that Russia's threatening to drop, and they will. If you know it's the news today, Putin already said Ukrainians are planning to drop an atomic bomb on us. Well, all that means is he's going to drop one soon and say that Ukraine dropped one first. And already America responded to this statement, because you don't have to be rakefet to understand when Putin says Ukraine is planning, everyone knows what he means. Well, if I would have said 2 years ago, Putin, a dear friend of the Jewish people, please understand me. But he wants Russia to be great again. He doesn't want America and the Ukraine next door and NATO. No one would believe me. And you see, same thing. If I would go into Teaneck and start yelling, I go into Lawrence, I start yelling, Jews, come in Aliyah, you know what it'll be in 2 years, you can't ride the subway in New York today. Murder after murder after murder attack. It's beyond comprehension. Today, yesterday, look at the New York Post. They every day they give you a full report on what goes on in the New York subways. So you see, people can't believe it. When you read Eim Habanim Smecha, oh boy, it hits home. You better wake up. So that's one volume. A second volume, which became very famous, it's actually two volumes, was by Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher. Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher, again, if you don't know who I'm talking about, Google him. He was a Gon Shebegoinim. He was a Gerach Chassid. Only a Chassid. In the literature world, you can't understand this. You understand? I could never be a Chassid to anyone who can't learn on my level. All right, you show me the Rav, Rav Moshe, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, I'll kiss their fingernails. But Stama Chassid, Rebbe, well, come on, cut it out. I can learn and I can not learn. And there's some Rebbeim today who have conquered the world, but if I were to talk with them in learning, I don't want to tell you who would come out on top. All right, but a chassid, it's amazing. He was a gerah chassid, a gonadir. It's like Rav Shlomo, it's like Rav Zevin was a Lubavitcher chassid. I don't know whether who could learn better, the sixth Rebbe or Rav Zevin. You're talking goyim sheba goyim. All right, I had the privilege of knowing not only Rav Zevin, of also knowing Rav Menachem Mendel Kasha. Morty, you got to ask a question. Rebbe, you knew Rav Kasha? Rav Kasha, you reach a certain point in life when you realize your ideas, what you're publishing, you're never going to finish. And he blocked out the whole world. He never finished the Varim. You follow? But he did finish four volumes. Omar, I don't think he finished by Midbar. It was finished by his son. He wouldn't talk to anyone. I came in Aliyah 69. He doesn't have a minute to waste. But I had one advantage. Reb David Silva, that's the son of Reb Lezer. Reb Lezer raised the money for the publication of the first volume of Torah Shlema. So Reb David Silva wanted to see Reb Menachem Kasha. I went along. And it was an experience. Now, he published HaTkufa HaGedolah. You know how many pages? It's about 700 pages. It's a heavy volume to lift. HaTkufa HaGedolah, total refutation of Satma, page by page by page. Then he published the Yom Kippur War. People said, could be the Satmar's right. He published Milchemet Yom HaKippurim. And total strength. Take it further. Don't be upset. We can move on and not give up our belief, our ideology. And by the way, his work had a tremendous impact on Gush Emunim. Gush Emunim, Charlie, you were here already. After the war, that's when Gush Emunim really sprouted. Because people were so depressed. And there were reasons to be depressed. We were almost wiped off the map. I mean, I was already living in Israel 4 years. I remember the Yom Kippur War. I remember from my own shul who went and never came back. The Kohen from South Africa. And this is Dayan Golda Meir. You know what happened? They didn't call up Elohim and Kissinger. How God lets the Rishoyim live so many years, I don't know, but God has his cheshbonot. The tzaddikim he takes, the Rishoyim, I think Kissinger is 99 today. He said, let the Arabs have a bit of a victory and they'll be willing to make peace. Let them kill 3,000 Jews and they'll be willing to make peace. God have mercy. So people were very depressed. And he wrote the Milchemet Yom Kippurim, and that's when Gush Emunim and Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, and that changed the whole Israeli scene until today. And this election is one of the main topics. Mayor Rav Michaeli just spoke out against allowing them to construct in Yehuda Vishomran. It's one of the issues in this election. I am voting. To me, it's not even a shiloh who to vote for. Smutridge and Ben Gavir with all, and it's not that I believe to put up a picture. Yesterday they asked me, someone came from America, asked me about the picture on Bart. They say Ben Gavir had a picture of Baruch Goldstein up in his house. Baruch Goldstein, the greatest tragedy ever. I'd smack his face. I should have smacked it. I know the whole family. I taught his sisters my Talmidam of Heket. You know where she is today? Here, she was paroled in my custody by Rabbi Cooperman because she participated in a demonstration. This is, you know, down south when they're giving up for Sinai, etc. And he was furious who gave her permission, and there were boys and girls there, men and women. And Rabbi Yitzchak Frank told Rabbi Koopman, yeah, I give him all the credit. Rabbi Frank said, if that girl is expelled from Michala, I am resigning. I'm not teaching. And others stood with him. So finally, Rabbi Koopman backed down, but he had to parole her. She had to report to me twice a week since I was her favorite Rebbe. I was the one. And you know where she is today? Not far from where you come from. Crown Heights, married to a sheikh, a seifer, I think 12 children. Beautiful for Klal Yisrael, but I sure hope some of those children come back where they belong. I knew his parents at his wedding. No, Chemeli had the first two brachot at the wedding. Mayor Kano was Masada Kedushin, and there, what are you talking? Go and kill Arabs. It's the end of us. If we start killing on our own, there'll be no Jews. My father used to say, the Arabs were smart, they'd let us alone. And we would fight with each other, so they'd walk in and take over the country without firing a shot. And even though I grew up Meikon is lab, but Palgin and Dibur, I don't accept everything. In order to survive, Rakepet has tremendous ideas, but there are other ideas out there. The election is over, I gotta shut my mouth and accept the results. There's no other solution. Because if we start killing each other, Hashem Yerachem, you see the Arabs, there were more killed yesterday, 6 people injured, it's beyond words, family fights, a kid is eating and it goes into a pizza, and if they kill him, a bullet comes in, they started, this is all news, this is not anything I'm making up. God have mercy. So this too is very important. But I want to tell you something, there's another volume which is not that well known. It's Lundis. And here too, you come to a chassid Rebbe. I mean, a Litvisher, believe me, I can't understand it. But a chassid's a chassid. The Rebbe, the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, who Kol HaTorah Kulo Baal Peh, I can testify, I saw it with my own eyes. So the seventh Rebbe would speak on Shabbos Mevorchim. There was always a Fabrengen. And he speaks on Shabbos, speaks on Yontif. So after Shabbos, after Yontif, they would repeat, there was a Chayzrim. Among the Chayzrim, there was one that stood out, heads and shoulder above the crowd. Give me his name, Reb Yoel Cohen. Reb Yoel. He could not only repeat every word the Rebbe said, he could smile when the Rebbe smiled, cry when the Rebbe cried, laugh when the Rebbe cried. Now I'm telling you facts. He was something. When the Rebbe died, many people said he should be the next Rebbe. And what a lamdan. And he was a chassid, min hashura, all right. He taught and he wrote and he edited. He put out a volume, Igeret Ma'ane Chacham, answering the Chacham, or answering in a wise way. And that Igeret was published, the edition I have is from 2012. I believe Chaim Dolphin, Rabbi Dolphin gave, I was so impressed with that. Wow. So you see, you have a slew of material that came out, some of it immediately, some of it gradually, but there's a world of svarim against Al Hagula, the Al Hatmura. Now, I want to go one step further. And this came up in this very classroom. I have some very intelligent people sitting in front of me. And they said, this is weeks ago, and they said, maybe the Satmar Rebbe, with all these statements and all that he mentions and holds, just reflects his own shortcomings. Someone who may be oversexed will think everyone is oversexed, all right? Someone who has a temper will think this is natural, everyone has a temper. I boast, and I boast correctly, I have not gotten mad since 1972. The last time I got mad was in a class, a postgraduate class in Michlala, and Rav Gorin had come out with his tshuva being Mata the Langer children, the Shailuv Mamzeret, I can't go, I've published on it in great detail, Kafar Aron Chelik Gimel, I believe. And I remember the girls were repeating, mocking Rav Gorin, And I got mad. I said, there's lumdus there. Anyone who reads Rav Gurin's tshuva, what he uncovered, and compares it to Rav Avadya, to Rav Moshe, they were matim mamzeret much more difficult than the Langer case. So I got angry. It's the last time I got angry. I learned Musa, anger. All right. And I have a problem. My whole life has been commitment to Torah. It took me a long time to understand that many Jews even Shomer Shabbos, but there's no real commitment. It's mitzvat anashim melumada. So you might want to say, and I have to thank Jack, I didn't know this, the Goldwater Rule. Anyone recognize? There was a candidate for the presidency of the United States, Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater was a big conservative. And the so-called, what you call progressives today, psychologists, made psychiatrists, they made statements about him, and they introduced the rule, our code of ethics exhorts psychologists to take precautions that any statement they made to the media are based on their professional knowledge, training, or experience in accord with appropriate psychological literature and practice. And you just can't come up and do not indicate that a professional relationship has been established. Don't come up and maledict Goldwater and as if you treated him. Make it clear you're doing that on the basis of your own study, but it's not that he has been your patient. And there's such a rule, of course, with Donald Trump, he has been accused by clinical psychologists displaying an assortment of personality problems, quote, including grandiosity, a lack of empathy, and malignant narcissism, and that he has, quote, a dangerous mental illness, despite having never examined him. They were criticized for breaking the Goldwater Rule. So very fascinating. Now this Goldwater Rule, can you apply it to the Satmarov? And I'll tell you, I would never want to take that approach. I'll tell you why. Could be there's truth to it. But if you say this to his chassidim, they're not going to accept what you're saying. This is not the way to abrogate or to negate the Satmar. This is their rebbe. You're taking psychology here, what you heard said about Trump. If you're a follower of Trump, this just makes you all the more his devotee. See what the progressives say? Etc. But I will say on one issue, I will take a psychological approach to the Satmarov. And this is something I've said over the decades, and I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. And it's very interesting. I've done research, I've spoken with psychologists on it. A real life story without names. It really happened. Three girls were classmates in Stern College. Two of those girls married. They were pretty, attractive. One girl was not that attractive. All three came in Aliyah. Unmarried, two married. One of the couples married, four children, and lo aleinu, the wife died young. Now who's going to marry a widower with four children? The other married girl made the shidduch between the unmarried lady, who was, you know, not as pretty, But she was willing to marry and take on the four children. Made the shidduch. The shidduch worked out fabulously. So now, many years later, you should see the children that this lady raised, those four original children. Eina is Shenster from the Andere. Charlie, got it? Little Yiddish? No? One was more beautiful than the other, more successful, more devoted, more Yiret Shemayim. Now, if you were that person who the shidduch was made for, then you had no chance of getting married, but here you married a man who needed desperately a wife to take on four children. How should you relate to the lady who made the shidduch? They never spoke to each other again. So I asked psychologists, how can this be? How can this be? Simple shaila. I know Rabbi Horowitz called me in 1969. He called me, sent me a telegram. Who had phones then? Telegram, I'd like to meet with you. I heard you got a doctorate in Jewish history. We're starting BMT. I want to have more than Gemara. Could you give a course in Jewish history? Excite the students. Don't bore them. No, until today, I'm in debt to Rabbi Horowitz. He found me. Changed my whole life. BMT changed my whole life. No question about it. Changed a little bit of the world, too. Imagine this campus we're sitting in that I was safe to get. All right. Psychologist explained to me. And they quoted the Rav, and I know this. The Rav, many times, would speak about the world is built upon Gomlim. What does Gomlim mean? The Rav once raised the question, all right, I don't want to get involved. I'll speak for 10 hours. I won't have any energy. One person said to me, Rebbe, you can talk for 10 hours. I could listen. I said, yeah, you can listen, but I'll fall away. But the Rav once raised the question, is Robinson Crusoe a model for Torah people? Only the Rav could raise a question like this. No? What do you say? And the Rav said, no, he's a poor model because he did everything himself. And what is a community based upon? Gomlim. We help one another. I bake bread. You make cheese. Someone makes wine. A Rav Paskin Shilas. This one is a Malamed. This is a Daka. We help one another. No one can do it all. Robinson Crusoe is not a perfect model for a good Jew. Now, the fact that Gomlim, we all help one another, there's trade-off. Fine, we get along with one another. Kol Yisrael Chaverim. You bake bread? All right, I teach. You make wine? There's normal activities, daily, mundane activities. But sometimes someone will do something for you that you can never ever repay him. He saves your life. That's something out of the ordinary. It's not wine, not cake, not bread, not teaching, not preaching, not being a posek. Someone gave you a kidney. What's going on today? If you saw last week's Besheva, the whole magazine section on transplants. I have students who gave away a kidney. There are people in this building who gave away a kidney. Well, see, they've done something for you that you can never repay them. And the result is, it's not a normal golden relationship. Either you love them unbelievably, and do whatever you can to honor, to thank them, or because you know you can never replay them, subconsciously you're angry at them. There's enmity. There's hatred. They forced you into a position where you've lost your own dignity. It's not that I can trade bread for wine. They've done something you can never repay. It's very fascinating. And I've seen it in life time and again. It's unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable. Because logically speaking, wow, look what that person did for me. You're angry. You bad mouth. What are you, crazy? I can tell you even more. Again, I learned Musa. I have to admit, I learned Musa. It had a deep effect on me. The real Musa, not phony Musa. Today, people read a little bit Masilah Jasharim. They think they learned Musa. I can tell you something. When I came in Aliyah, I was so naive. So I submitted my doctorate to Bar Ilan. They gave it to the professor of Jewish history. He just celebrated his 95th birthday. Gave me back the doctorate. First of all, he was from France, so he didn't even know what I wrote about. And he just mucked the whole thing through the back of my face. You should know, until today, I am so thankful to that individual. Because of him, I learned Torah. Because of him, I achieved a little bit of Hashem. Follow me, I'd gone to Bar Ilan. I'd be a professor of Jewish history. I'd repeat the same course every year. Oh my gosh, did me the greatest favor in the world. And never say a bad word. Wow. Never a bad word. My dear students, the Kastner story. See, this is where the Rebbe came under a lot of criticism. Kastner saved his life. Pshuto k'mashma'o. Take a look. Someone of my students listening to me got in touch with Yaakov Jungreis. Remember? Last year. And he asked Yaakov about the Satmar Rav. And Yaakov Jungreis is a Yira Tzaddik. It's the sole surviving sibling of the Jungreis family. It's Esther's brother. Older brother. And Yaakov Jungreis said about the Satmar Rav, who saved his life. He was a tzaddik yesod olam. They would ask the Satmar Rav, when he would curse the Jewish agency and maledict the Zionists, Wer hat euch gerettet? Who saved you? And the Satmar Rav, instead of giving Kastner credit, the train, the Jewish agency, the Eibishter hat mir geraten. God saved me. And he turned away and walked away, wouldn't say one good word about Kastner. And this I'm willing to accept, and I think Hasidim too. If you're intelligent, you can understand this. Saved the Satmar Rav's life. Couldn't make his peace with it. The Eibishter hat mir geraten. No, it's true about everything in life. You say to me, why are you thankful to Whitey Horowitz? God sent him to tell you to do it. Absolutely. But he was the shliach. He was the shliach. Why are you angry at this lady who made this fabulous shidduch that saved your life, changed your whole reality? Your whole eternity? God did it. God did it correct. We believe in our Kaddish Baruch Hu. Absolutely. Shkacha pratit. But she was the Gute Shliach. See, there, that area, I'm willing to accept the psychological explanation. Makes sense. And it doesn't put the Satmar Rav down. Because this is a reality of human existence. You would have to learn a lot of Musa. You would have to sit in front of Rabbi Yisrael Salantav, as I had the privilege of sitting in front of him. Direct connection. Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson, Talmud of the Alta. The Alta saw Rabbi Yisrael yet. All right? I have the only smicha that Rabbi Lesson gave in the United States. All his years there. His family verified it. Had a big late 90s in this building. We had a beautiful session after class with a whole kiddush. I gave a copy of the smicha Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson gave me to his grandson. His grandson gave me, I have it until today, copies of the smicha of his grandfather. But not many people learn Musa, not many people take Musa to heart, not many people can live with Musa. Your whole life, the Tzadmurov was raised, the Gaon at Tzadik, cleanliness, nikiyot, his body, etc. All right. But what the train, the salvation, what happened there, it was very difficult for him to bow to Kashna, to thank Kashna. So it was just the opposite. Vetach get out of it, and they called the Rebbe word by word. The Eibishtat may get out of it, and he turned away and walked on. Wouldn't deal with it. There I'm willing to accept the psychological explanation, because it's an explanation of mortals, our frailties, our shortcomings, the reality of human existence. I can go even more. A Talmud just said to me that I accomplished something. He said, no, I don't want to take it, because if I take the accomplishment, you'll think you're God. I said, what do you mean I'll think I'm God? He said, you once told a joke. I heard it. I told it, and I didn't tell it in class. I don't think so. I think I told it in the office to someone. So it's a famous joke. You all know it. That they have a shidduch in Borough Park, and the girl goes out, and she comes home, and she signals her father, nice boy. So the father takes him to the other room, and he starts talking with them, and tell me, how are you going to support my daughter? And the guy says, God will take care. How many years will you learn in Kollel? God will take care. What will you do when you have children? God will take care. Father comes out all smiles and says, Mazel tov, we have a shidduch. And the father says, and they asked the father, no, why are you so pleased? And the father says, I've never been called God so many times. So I say, believe me, if I'd be God, I could do miracles. But we're not God. I'm davening. I'm afraid to say all the names that people ask me to daven for. I'll miss you. I don't know. I'm a minion again. The Balkori came over to me today. There's a world famous professor from Hebrew U. He says Ashrei is so many words. How can you say Ashrei in 9/10 of a second? You follow? They daven God. If I mention all them, so what I did today, I just mentioned my wife's name. And all the other names I mentioned when after Kriyat HaTorah, when they make him a Shabarach, so I made myself while he's back, I don't want to be Tarech B'tzibur. I mentioned the other names. But boy, if I would be God, wow. I had so much heartache, students, this past year, death. But that's Kohelet. I never had so much Kavanah as when I read Kohelet. This is Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos, if you follow me. So there I'm willing to accept it. But beyond that, I don't want to get involved with such theories. We can refute the Satmar with sources, the Vah Hashem, Zu Halacha, and we'll get to it. Now, I want to show you something from the present Lubavitcher Rebbe. Present. I'm always the messianist. I should say, time stands still for me. I mean, for me, I understand why I said present. But from the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, And this is a very fascinating sheet. I'm ending off the class now. It was very fascinating. It's from 1968. A Talmud, I have many Talmudim, Lubavitch sent it to me. And Beit Yaakov, from the Beit Yaakov in Borough Park, visited the Rebbe. And they asked his advice what to do about the Six-Day War. Because all the students are so inspired, and here, how do we talk with them? And it's a secular state, you know, with all the problems. And the Rebbe here, and you can see the Rebbe struggling. Remember, I've told you more than once, the sixth Rebbe, when he began his Rebbeship, was no different than Satma. Satmar never forgave, Munkach never forgave Chabad. They changed already in the sixth Rebbe's lifetime. But in the seventh Rebbe's lifetime, although the seventh Rebbe claimed it, nothing changed. On the ground, Rakhepet is absolutely right. There was no greater Zionist than the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe. You heard, I played the tape, I quoted Israeli ambassador and what he had to say about the Rebbe, word by word, and that was a from Jew I'm quoting. And he goes on that we have to be very thankful. These were Nisim, Gluyim, Hatzalat Yisrael, and we have every right to be thankful. But when you talk about that this is Atchalta de Geula, Ubiat Mashiach, we still have a way to go. And he refers to the Rambam in Hilchot Melachim, that if the Mashiach, if someone can, if you kofet b'nei Yisrael l'kiyam mitzvot v'lashuv al Hashem, oz neida shehigia ha-geula. And you see, very fascinating. He doesn't say it isn't Atchalta de Geula. And you all know the whole fight about saying Atchalta de Geula. I have no problem by Atchalta de Geula. If this isn't Atchalta de Geula, what is? We have 7 million Jews living here, and Jews are pouring in every day. And I can't believe how many people from Lawrence, from Teaneck, they're telling me they want to come on Aliyah. I can't believe Beit Shemesh. What's happening in Beit Shemesh, I repeat again, the only city in the Gola that observes one day Yom Tov, Al Pi Halacha. It's beyond words what's happening. I mean, everybody Shalom. Wow. I remember when I came in Aliyah, they said Beit Shemesh, someday young Israel plans to build there. I visited Beit Shemesh. Remember you had to go through Beit Shemesh to go to Tel Aviv. There was no road yet. Oh my gosh. What a garnish. All right, there was a lot of religion there. They're from people, Mesoratiyim, Mikvot, etc. Americans who live here, impossible. Today, they don't let you in if you're not an Anglo speaker, plain and simple. But Atchalta de Geula, he says, we'll know if we reached it when everyone is from. All right, Baruch Hashem, we're heading there. But here, he says, Medinat Yisrael, Le Medinat Yisrael, Ein Shum Shayachet Le Geulat Yisrael. Avolim makom hatzala upleita leklal Yisrael, v'ze gam kein inyan gadol ma'ot. See, that's from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I have to say, this is not much different than the Rav's viewpoint ultimately, and others. We can't be sure what Gula means, Mashiach, but hatzala. Doors open, Aliyah, Balei Tshuva movement. What's happened here? V'ze gam kein inyan gadol ma'od. Underline inyan gadol ma'od. And you can see this is the difference. This is not Rav Kook speaking. It's not Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. It's the Lubavitcher Rebbe. But you can see already the tremendous difference how Lubavitch, I'll use the word, has matured over the last 100 plus years, more than 100 years, last 130, 40 years. All right. So far, so good. I've presented the Satmaru's viewpoint honestly. Yes, there was a lot of Akmus Nefesh with the Al HaGlul of Al HaTmura. I can tell you, I worked on the Encyclopedia Judaica. They brought me in Aliyah in my first 2 years there. I worked on the Encyclopedia. I'm a staff editor. My name is listed. And the new edition online, they give credit to all the articles I wrote. Because originally, if you wrote an article that you weren't an expert in the field, it was put in ED, editor. And now in the new edition, they not only have the articles where I get credit, AR, but all the ED are listed as AR as well. So, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. But one has to be thankful and humble with what we've seen here. And there was a lot of consternation, upset the Satmar. And I worked on the Encyclopedia, I had a big schut. Open up Masechet, I believe it is Nazir, and you'll see it was translated by Bernard Klein. Who is Bernard Klein? Son-in-law of Rebbe Eliyahu Lopin, the great Baal Musa from Kelm. Rebbe Eliyahu Lopin later, Kvach Hasidim, Rabbi Mishka Kovsky, he was the Mashkiach there, a legendary figure. Today, more known in the Haredi world than the Tzioni Dati world, but someone who lived in both. This is his son-in-law, a Lamdin Muvhak, a Baal Musa, a sweetness of a human being. I had a big schut. I met a lot of great people in the States. They were all Olim Chadashim. I worked for Rav Levi Yitzchak Rabinovich, the chief rabbi of South Africa. Rabbi Alexander Kalbach, chief rabbi of Belfast, we all worked together. And Rabbi Klein said to me, and I worshipped him because he was, he reminded me of Rav Lessen, Azat Edelkeit. And he said to me, "No, take a look who had a stroke. You know why he had a stroke? Alagula v'al hatmura." And this was a Yira Tzadikah. They were so angry at the Satmar. But you have to read the Svarim, and you see the Lubavitcher Rebbe, there was this tremendous Yitzhak. How do you deal with it? And the explanations, okay, on the Kastner train, I'll accept the psychological inference. On the others, you may be right, you may be wrong, but you're not going to convince a chassid. I will later try to convince a chassid. Okay. Where do we go from here? I have more, a drop more to say simply on refuting the Satma on this level. I just want to cite a very basic source and a source that is quite prominent in religious Zionist circles. Then I want to come back to Satma, to Williamsburg, and understand the era. And I want to understand Chabad and Lubavitch, the 70s, the 80s, World War III. And then I want to look at Satmar today and let's see what they're like, what the problems are, and try to understand what the future may hold. And with that, we will finish, I don't know how many years already, 11, 12 years, maybe more, on the history of Torah in the United States, in the Western world. And then, Ribbono Shel Olam should give me strength. I want to go on to a major topic that will occupy us for the next decade or so. And I want to pay back a debt to the Shanghai crowd. And I want to deal with the history and understanding of the yeshivat in Eastern Europe. Although I'll make one exception, I won't begin with Volozhin. I want to begin first, just because it's a a mate mitzvah, I want to talk about Yachal, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, and explain what the innovation was, what was there. It was very different. And then we can go into Volozhin and the other yeshivat that are so well known. But Yachal, it never really had a replacement. You have Yachal in Bnei Brak, Rav Dvuzna family, but the original idea was overwhelming, and who Rav Meir Shapira was. And it's very sad. A man who gave his life and built, and all the success disappeared. Gestapo took over the building a few years later. And I always think of Meir Shapira dreamt of building Yachal in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael. Imagine had he built it here, all that money and effort, but the hour was not right. Okay. Are there any questions from the wonderful audience in front of me of the most erudite people in the Torah world? Okay. Yomo, can the world, are there any questions? I think it's open. I think you can speak. Are there any questions from all the erudite people listening to me around the world? Can you ask Mark Wiener, say something. You hear me?
It's working.
Okay. Mark, I answered your son. He asked me a question. I answered him, and I'll check out more. You can tell him to look at his email. Anyone else have a question? Okay. I want to thank everyone for their participation. And until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'Danya.